Okay. So last week we spoke about the brachas of Yotzer Or. And the concluding bracha there was Or Chadash al Tzion Ta'ir, V'nizkech Chulanu Meher La'oro, that just like there's a light in the natural world, there's the, and which reminds us that Hashem is the God of nature, but He also guides our lives, and therefore through His Torah, which is expressed by the notion of Tzion, the Makam HaMikdash, as we've said often. So we're asking Hashem for that light, the light of the Torah, to once again shine at its maximum, and we should be zocheh to have our Torah as the center of all of humanity's attention when it finally, when Mashiach finally comes and we're having a Beis HaMikdash again back to Yerushalayim. So the next bracha is a direct flow from that idea. Because Ava Rabba is essentially a bracha about us accepting the Torah. As a matter of fact, if you look at some of the Mefarshim, they talk about the first set of luchos and the second set of luchos that are alluded to in the early words of Ava Rabba. Hirsch doesn't get into all that, but halacha, I know I've been given that psak. When a person, let's say, sometimes I wake up Friday night in winter, I go to sleep early, wake up in the middle of the night, want to learn Torah. So I make a Birchas HaTorah then. So it's 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, I learn for an hour or two, I go back to sleep. So I've asked, do I make a new Birchas HaTorah when I wake up? And the answer is, it's a Shaila. So avoid making a new Birchas HaTorah. Rather, when you get to Ava Rabba, have in mind that that's your Birchas HaTorah. Because indeed, it is essentially a bracha about are receiving the Torah. So I'm going to quickly just highlight a couple of the things that are in the Hirsch Siddur, and then I'll move on to Shema, that are in Ava Rabba. So, first of all, when we mention Chemla Gedola V'Yisei Rachamalta Aleinu, what a great Rachmanis you had on us. So that's, later we talk about Veloni Vosh, and why we shouldn't be embarrassed forever. Those are pretty strong words, be embarrassed forever. What's there to be embarrassed about, and what's the great, unique mercy? So Hirsch understands here that we're aware of the love of Hashem that He has for us by elevating us. We are zocha to carry and live by His Torah. The fact that we were given that responsibility and that we're given a privilege is itself the chemla gedola. And we're going to say that if we wouldn't have it, how ruined, how empty our lives would be. That's why this very intense plea, Rachem aleinu, harachmanis on us, the same Yulibeinu, lahavin, lahaskel, lishmoa, lilmo, the lamed, like have rachmanis and put in our hearts to understand, to be able to learn, to teach, to keep the Torah, and enlighten our eyes, the harein einu b'sarasecha, v'dadek libeinu mitzvasecha, and unify our hearts to love and to fear you. Those are powerful words. So we realize, in the words of Hirsch, how empty our lives would be without a proper understanding and conviction in living by Hashem's Torah. So it's one thing to learn His Torah, but we're asking for the ability to really understand it and to be inspired by it and to have the moral strength to live by it. Then, by the end of the bracha, it says, V'keraf tanu l'shimcha gadol sovemeth. Right, well, even before that, V'havienu l'shalom abakan forth, bring us peacefully from all over the world, from the four corners of the earth, bring us back upright to our land. So it says, if we are correctly understanding our role here, and we correctly live by the Torah, only then will it have become worth it for us to have been delivered politically from our tzaras. But if we just show up in Eretz Yisrael and we haven't gotten there, and we're not really committed to the Torah, so that's not the returning to the Torah that we're hoping for. So that's why it's in the sequence. We realize that even like when we receive the Torah, we receive the Torah outside Eretz Yisrael. And coming to Eretz Yisrael is a nation of the Torah, then arrives to the next level of being the Kayim the Torah. But just to be in Israel, without that deep understanding, it falls short of our aspirations and our hopes to come to Eretz Yisrael. Just a couple of other things that he points out here in this bracha. We mentioned Bavur Avosenu Shabbat.
Where is it? Seeming to not be able to.
Oh, where's Ava Rabba?
Yeah.
It's in Shacharis right before Kriya Shema.
Okay. interesting. Is it? I don't know why I don't see it.
After Baruch Hu, a couple of.
Okay. For Nusach Sfard also, or.
Yeah, pretty much. You probably have Avas Olam if it's Nusach Sfard, not Avar Rabba. I think the words are slightly different.
Oh, so maybe that's why I didn't notice. Okay, let me. So you said it's right before Shema and Shacharis.
Right. It's been a while since we've done Nusach Sfard, but I think it says Avas Olam there. Am I right, Chaim? You'd have a Nusach Sfard.
I'm looking at it now.
It's after Baruch Hu or before Baruch Hu?
Right after Baruch Hu, there's a bunch of brachas. So depending if you're looking at Shabbos or weekday, wouldn't matter. But after the bracha of Yotzei Ma'ariv, which goes on for really, it's a page or two of that very long bracha, then right before Kriyat Shema, there's a very long bracha again.
Avraham Loretz.
Sorry?
Amir Loretz.
Even after Amir. No, Amir Loretz.
Yeah.
Oh, immediately before. Immediately before.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
So again, just to recap. So again, Abba Rabba, the Chemla Gedola is the great Rachmanis that you have on us, that you gave us the Torah. And mentioning Bavur Avosenu, for the sake of our fathers that trusted in you, Shabbat Chuvacha. So which fathers are we referring to? So he says a theme that he often refers back to. These are our fathers who learned to trust in Hashem by Yetzias Mitzrayim and through the years in the Midbar. We mentioned in other times the putting us under tremendous pressure by taking away our food and our water in the Midbar, where we had to realize how dependent we were on Hashem, was intentional for us to be trained in Bitachon. And all of that, we also mentioned leading up to Shavuos, that's a preliminary. You need to have that training in Bitachon in order to properly receive the Torah. Because in order to properly keep the Torah, it's going to challenge you in many different situations in life. You're going to have to trust that Hashem knows what he's doing and that'll get us through the challenges. So it fits into everything else that he speaks about thematically. So if this is a bracha about the Torah, so we want to make sure that our ability to accept the Torah isn't just in our head, but it's, hold on, my shalivin's coming in, but our ability to the Makabal of the Torah will also translate into actual practice. So therefore, we're asking for the proper bitachon, which will lead us to proper keeping of the mitzvah. So we're doing Avar Rabba, Moshe. We're almost done with that, but you got it right in time for Krishna. So just a couple of more things. He says again, one last point here, and again, consistent with everything we've been talking about. He says that our learning will only succeed and achieve its purpose if we learn with the intention of fulfilling the mitzvahs. Just to learn to know stuff, there's no point in it. I mean, maybe it's nice. It shows you respect something from Hashem. But the goal of why Hashem taught this stuff wasn't to know stuff, but to live by His Torah. And a couple of other things which often are leave you wondering until you see it. In there's a phrase, Ki v'shem katshecha. Batachnu, we trusted in your shame kachacha. That's a funny expression. It's towards the two-thirds of the way through the bracha. We trusted in your shame kachacha, gadol ve'anayra batachnu. What does it mean to trust in Hashem's name? So Hirsch explains, he believes that it means what's revealed to us concerning hashgacha pratis, the way Hashem runs the world, that's Hashem's name. Our perception of Hashem is what he shared with us about how he runs the world. So when we trust, again, the idea of trusting in Hashem, when we trust in what Hashem told us about Him and how He will interact with us, therefore, we're asking Hashem to give us His Torah, to help us achieve the goals of His Torah, which is to understand His Torah, have the moral strength to live by His Torah, and ultimately to be back in Eretz Yisrael to live the Torah in the maximum way possible. And then it leads right into Kriya Shema with Uliyachedcha. What is Uliyachedcha referring to? Herzer's words are, hold on a second, to avow your oneness. So that means to say the mitzvah, to do what we're about to do in Kriya Shema. That's Uliyachedcha, which is really the main theme of Judaism, and where Hashem wants us to shine is basically the first pasuk that every cheder kid learns. And as Hirsch puts it, when a person leaves this world, if he can't pronounce those words at that time, it's what all of his friends and family are whispering around him at that time. So this is our mantra. If there's any one line for a Jew, it's the pasuk of Shema Yisrael. So what I'd like to do tonight, mostly, is speak about not even the whole first paragraph of Shema. We'll allude to some of that, and not even the Vahaya, and not even the third paragraph. Maybe I'll tell you a couple of small things about that, but mostly to talk about the first few psukim of Kriyat Shema. So first of all, the idea of Shema, Hirsch points out, notice it says Shema Yisrael. It doesn't say Re'eh. Look, it says Shema. So what's up with that? Not that one would have been better, but he wants to bring out a point. And that is that for the nation that first received and saw all the miracles, it would have been appropriate for Hashem to talk about seeing. And he did say that. There are psukim like that. In Perek Dalet and Devarim, it says, Ata, Harisa Ladas, I showed you to know. There are psukim where it's talking about Hashem showed you things. There are psukim, Ru'u Halichosecha, Lakim, there's a psukim in Tehillim like that. There are things that we see. That's if you watch those kind of miracles. But that was for that generation. But for us, afterwards, what we're going to get out of, the way we're going to know about that is from hearing it from the previous generation. For us, the seeing is something that was transmitted by our hearing from the last door. And if anything, the things that we see to find Hashem are not open miracles, but they're the way Hashem conducts himself in nature, which is also very beautiful. However, he says as follows. The way we see Hashem in nature is not our proof that there's a God. It's only after we have our Mesorah that it's fact, because we know it's fact, on the basis of our knowledge, because we got the Mesorah from the last door that they actually witnessed, from back to Har Sinai, then everything that we look at as we study nature and history, it'll be with that perspective. And that'll open our eyes up more to see the hand of Hashem. But the fact that we believe in Hashem, that's Shema. We hear it from the Lev Dar. And that helps, that enables our, again, like what we see, to then be more meaningful and to show us in hindsight, there's Hashem and there's Hashem as we look at things in our life. So he says it's a fact. It's not a belief, it's a fact. It's knowledge. Because all of Klai Yisrael stood at Har Sinai. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. So now he refers us to a Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud Gimel on the Beis, and there's another Gemara, Daf Yud Dalet on the Beis, and goes on to Daf Tes Vav. And that is that we refer to this first pasuk of Shema as Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, accepting the yoke of heaven upon ourselves. So we have to see what about the sentence is doing that. So, let's go back into this. And the words of the Gemara, let me just quote you that. Kivin dam lichtei l'malo l'mato l'abba ruchas ha-shamayim su'lo tzichus. Once you make Hashem as your king, above you, below you, and to all four directions, that's all you need. You've fulfilled your requirement. You've done what you need to do. Which he says it's not just saying God is the God of all over the place, but it means something more profound. But I'll just quote you the words that are in the Hersidur, kind of condensing his parish on the Chumash. He says as follows: we have given adequate practical demonstration of our recognition of God daily if its pronunciation stirs us to render homage to his supreme sovereignty in all the universe, in heaven above and earth below. In other words, when we talk about Hashem being everywhere, if that it permeates, it goes deep inside us, and it means everything about us is now dedicated to Hashem. Another Gemara there that I mentioned, Daf Yudal in the Beis and Daf Tes Vav in Bracha, says as follows: Amar Yochanan, Harotzis Sheyikabel of Ol Malchus Shemayim Shlema. If you want to completely do this right, completely accept Hashem on you, Yifne V'Yito V'Yaniach Tzilin. You should cleanse your body. And then take out your tefillin and completely purify your mind and your body. Wear tefillin which have these deep messages on them. Yikra Kriyashma, yisfalo. Say Kriyashma, and then follow into that with tefillah. The Zohi Kabbalah Salmach HaShemayim Shlema. That's the ultimate of how to be Mekabel Olmach HaShemayim. So he explains that Kabbalah Salmach HaShemayim is the subordination of all of our personality and our entire world to the one and unique dominion of God. When you say that Hashem is the God of everything, so that means everything that's in your life, not just everything out there. He's the God of me and my neighbors and the neighborhood and the country. It means much more than that. It means every aspect of my interaction with anything, my eating, my sleeping, my pleasures, my thought process, my family, everything within my personal life, he is the God of that. He gave me that, and all of my being should be a dedication and a use of all of that for some higher purpose. So that leads right into, and that's all in thought. That Hashem Elokein Hashem Echad, that's all in the thought. The Ahavta, we'll see in a minute, is what, how that translates into what exactly you're supposed to be committing to. But before we move on to the Ahavta, I just want to talk about the first pasuk a little more. It says, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, that's the Yud Kevavke, the God of Rachamim, is Elokeinu. He's also our God, Elokim, the God of Din, but it's our personal God. He's directing our lives. Elokim is the way our nature, or the way our lives are fixed in place. So he's the God, as Hirsch often says, Hashem Yud Kevavke is the God who's directing things. Elokeinu, or Elokim, is the God who puts things as they should be. That's the God, usually the God of nature, but in our, when we talk about God as Elokeinu, he gave us the setup in our life as it is. He's the God who designed our life as it is. Hashem Elokeinu, he's guiding us in what he in the position that he put us in life. But there's Rachamim and there's Din. Sometimes the position isn't always easy. Hashem Echad. Now, this is a strong statement against polytheism. They believed, and he says from Sukkim, we find, in Daniel and other places, that they believe there were two forces in the world. I think we mentioned that just last week, that they believe that there was, there's a pasuk in Perka Mem Hei, Sukkim of Vav and Zion. Well, there it says, you need to know that Hashem is Yotze Or of Arei Choshech. He creates, he forms light, creates darkness. Oste Shalom Uvorei Ra, and he even created bad. And he Hashem Oste Kolela. I'm Hashem who made all of that. There's a statement in this pasuk that there are two separate conflicting forces. That's how they believe. They couldn't. Their way to resolve it was to say that there's obviously certain powers out there in the world of spirit which are good to man, and those are the ones we want to interact with and bring down all the bracha. And then there are these mean, nasty forces out there, and we got to just sort of kiss up to the nice gods and to protect us from the damaging, nasty, dangerous gods. And there was a whole category of gods one way and gods that way. That was essentially, in a nutshell, a simplified version of what polytheism is all about. So Hashem is telling us it's not just that there's two separate realms that God conducts himself in, that there's Hashem who conducts the world of Rachamim and Hashem who conducts himself in the aspect of Din. Maybe in our simplified way of thinking of things, sometimes we have to say that just to make sense of it. But it's far beyond that. It doesn't say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu and then Hashem Elokeinu Echad, that Hashem is one, both the Hashem of Rachamim and Hashem of Din is one. It doesn't say Hashem Elokeinu Echad. It says Hashem Echad. Yudke Vavke, meaning even the Elohim, even the Din that we see it's the same exact place. It's coming from the same Hashem. Hashem, who's Elohim, that we perceive him sometimes behaving with two different ways, even we believe it's all one God, but it's far beyond that. It's Hashem Echad. All of it is one pure Hashem who has only one kind of intention. And when it's hard, it's also coming from the Midas. We just don't chap it all the time. And before we move on to the Ahavta, just one interesting thought. For those of you who like Rambam and deep philosophy, well, apparently Hirsch doesn't like that stuff. He says here, and I think he's talking about the Rambam. He doesn't mention the Rambam here, but I know in the 19 letters he has other issues with the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, And I think this is where he's also arguing against the Rambam. He says as follows, let's read you his words. And it's classic Hirsch in that he would be talking this way. Speculative thinkers, this is in his commentary to Chumash, ascribe additional meaning to the statement Hashem Echad. In their view, this statement teaches us something about God's essence, about the nature of his being. They interpret the predicate Echad as not one and only, but as one and unified in his essence, simple, not composite, as if it's defining Hashem himself. They think that this statement is a key to transcendental knowledge, and that it gives us insight into the nature of God himself. That's, I think he's summarizing the Rambam's take on Achdus Hashem. However, as far as we know, there is no support for such an interpretation among our sages. What is more, and this is classic Hirsch, what is more, according to this interpretation, Achdus Hashem, which is to be the fundamental basis of all our thought, becomes useless to our lives. You're just going to be a philosopher, and now you know what God is, and that's what Hashem wants. What is that going to do? How does that change what you do? In Hirsch's understanding of the whole Torah, it's telling you how to live. And if there's just something to think about, you'll be a smart person, a deep philosopher, that's meaningless. Everything has to translate to action. He doesn't see what does it gain anything in your lives. What does it achieve? So it can't be, but that's what it means. Besides that, there's no Gemara, there's no Chazal about this. In our opinion, he adds, these thinkers overlook the limitations of human knowledge. So he's saying, you think you could really understand what Hashem is? It's not possible anyway. So for so many reasons, what's the purpose of learning about this? And do you really think you could achieve that anyway? It can't be that's what it's about. So therefore, rather, Hashem Achad means not that this defines God, he is this, and there's a whole deep, somehow metaphysical understanding of Hashem. No, it's that there's only one God, meaning in all the contradictory things you see in life, all these contradictory forces within yourself too, it's all one. And dedicate all of it to something higher, to Hashem. Whole different, it's a Musar lesson. It's not some philosophical idea, which is really everything Hirsch ends up finding in the Torah. It turns out to be a direction in life. So with that understanding of the oneness of Hashem, the unity, meaning everything is all one, he then says the next pasuk, Yahavta, tells us the following, a lovely little money quote. He says, the Yahavta is the direct logical consequence of Hashem Echad, the unity of life that flows from the unity of God. If everything is from Hashem, then every aspect of ourselves is back to Hashem. So first of all, let's talk about what does it mean. What does love mean? What is Yahavta? To know how to do this, and then we'll talk about all the parts of this love. So he says the following. Here's a rule in Hebrew grammar about three letters that always start with the letter Aleph. Anytime the first letter in the root is an Aleph, he says, it means that it's relevant, whatever those last two letters mean, it's relevant to the person who's it's talking about that thing. For instance, I'll give you two examples. In the word Amar, so the Aleph is about that individual. The Mem Resh means to exchange, like the word Temura, to exchange something. Amar means to exchange oneself. When you talk, you're giving of yourself in those words. Or another example, Achal, to eat. So the word Kola means to completely destroy something. So Achal means I'm going to consume something completely relevant to me. So therefore, he says it makes perfect sense what the word ahava means. Have means to give or to bring. It can go both directions. When it's relevant to yourself, it means to bring to yourself or to bring yourself to something else. Therefore, he says, have to give to bring, ahava to give oneself up, and also to bring to oneself. Ahava is a deep attachment of the hearts. One devotes himself to another so as to draw the other close to oneself and to press the other to one's heart. So you're giving and you're bringing back. But what's the reason why you would be dedicating yourself in the hope that that being that you're dedicating yourself to reciprocates and you bring that person close to, that being close to you, or with humans the same way? He says, therefore, when we talk about loving Hashem, it's not some close your eyes and feel some emotion, but it's really, it's a commitment of how you're going to live your life in the yearning for feeling the reciprocation from Hashem, that you're going to give everything to Hashem, and there's going to be that sense that because you're so dedicated, there's Hashem smiling down on you. And in the Ahavta we see, and the smiling down is the bracha that we receive when we commit to doing the right things, and that's the Hayim Shamoah, all the brachas that will happen. So he says, don't go about it the opposite direction. That's not love. That's self-serving. If you want to do something for God in order to get something, that's not for the purpose of bonding with Hashem. That's because you want to get something. That was exactly what the mistake was in misusing the Beis HaMikdash. We treated it the way the idolaters treated their religion, that you're trying to get something out of the gods, and then you'll have a happy country and a happy land. The goal isn't to have bracha. The goal is the closeness to Hashem. And Hashem promises that closeness brings bracha. The Shechina brings bracha. But the goal isn't to have the bracha. The goal is the closeness to Hashem. That's Ahava. So to me, that was very insightful. That first of all, about the grammar rule, but also the Ahava is this duality of giving and bringing close to oneself. Bring oneself close and then hoping for the reciprocal response to feel that closeness back. So now these three things that are mentioned in this pasuk, you should love Hashem b'chol levavcha, u'b'chol nafshecha, u'b'chol me'odecha. So everybody knows the famous Chazal, b'chol levavcha is b'shnei yitzrecha, because it doesn't say libcha, it says levavcha. You have two kinds of hearts. Because a heart really is the way you think about things, and there's a positive way and there's a negative way. There's a yetzer tov and yetzer hara. And somehow you got to serve Hashem with both. It doesn't mean to always say no to Yitzhara. It means to know the right placement of how to deal with it. Everything in its right measure. That's called serving Hashem with both parts of you. In other words, that's the goal here. Understand that your totality is there to be put into Avodas Hashem. That's the idea that we said before. Hashem encompasses everything. That means everything about you, your body, your emotions, everything about you that's pulling in a different direction, is part of your Avodas Hashem. It's not just negate everything that's physical, as the Christians would have you become a monk and disconnect from your body and just be spiritual. That'll be the highest level of fasting all day and just being some sort of a pristine human, almost an angel. That's not the goal. It's in the physical world, find a way to serve Hashem. Either use it or control it, but each one tempered by the way Hashem wants us to serve Him. And just bear with me a second. So let me read you here. So he says that sometimes you have to hold back. He says, hence, loving God with all our hearts presupposes that we will be ready to gladly forego the fulfillment of our dearest wishes if they are not in accordance with God's will, and that we will cheerfully resign ourselves to God's strict rules, strict justice, if we are denied our fondest wishes. For we will be content in the knowledge that even in withholding from us the realization of our heart's desires, He shows us the same love for which we would have given reverent thanks had He granted us their fulfillment. Sometimes you don't eat something that's not kosher, and that too, that's fine. That's what Hashem wants. And sometimes you go to Simcha and eat the piece of cake, and that's Avodas Hashem. It's all Avodas Hashem in the right time, the right way. B'chol nafshecha, so it's your whole body, and we mentioned part of it has to do with sometimes serving Hashem with your body, but also it means sometimes not having a body, if that's what it calls for, being ready to die, al kiddush Hashem. With every breath you take, be prepared to dedicate that to Avodas Hashem. And B'shas Hashmat, he goes into the whole thing, the halacha is about when you would have to do that. We're not getting into the Gemara Sanhedrin, that's not for now. U'b'chol me'odecha ma'od, so Chazal say with all your money, b'chol mamono, but it means more than that. It also means b'chol mida o mida shuhamodeh, with every measurement of life that He dishes out to you in your life. Every aspect of what God gives you is your arena to serve Him. If it's money, so it has to do with whatever that may be, mitzvahs of using your money, but it also means how to set limits of with how you use that money, not just to do mitzvahs like tzedakah, but it's understand that everything in life, there's a kedoshim to you, a general theme of how life is supposed to be lived. All of that is part of dedicating your life to Hashem. So the boundaries of life in everything you have, your physical, your emotion, your intellect, and all your possessions, all the talents that you may have. People have talents, right? Somebody's a musician, someone's a poet, and that should be, it shouldn't be, we shouldn't departmentalize our lives where I have my stuff that I like to do, and then I have the Jewish stuff that I do. I show up to shul, and I do these other things that are really religious, but they don't always talk to each other. Really, it's supposed to be a symphony of every aspect of our existence is a dedication to Hashem. And then, obviously, he goes on to say, and the rest of the paragraph talks about this, teaching your children means that it's not just something that's for now, but this is going to be forever. You're going to carry this into the next generations. Shinatan levanecha, b'shif o'vesecha, at home, as you're walking in the road, where there's no time and place where this doesn't happen. And tying this to your hands and your arms and wearing tefillin means that you're binding yourself, you're committing yourself to this idea. You're putting it between your eyes. This should be your focal point as you go through life, is looking towards what is the Ratzon Hashem. So that's very briefly the first paragraph. And really the biggest thing I wanted to talk about was the first few psukim. Briefly, the next two, I'm just going to really say two little tidbits here. But to me, they were really good and relevant. There's a pasuk in Vehayom Shemoa that always confused me. And finally, I think I got something. L'man yirbu yimeichem v'yimei b'neichem. That's in Parshas Ekev. In order that yirbu yimeichem v'yimei b'neichem, that's a hard pasuk to really understand. That you'll have lots of days, the days will be increased, and the days of your children, al ha'adama, on the land, that Hashem nishpa Hashem la'avoteichem l'seis land, that Hashem promised your forefathers to give to them. Fine. So it sounds like they'll be there a long time. That sounds great. So you'll be there a long time, your children will be there a long time, but then we got a problem. The end of the pasuk says, kimei ha'shamayim al ha'aretz, as the days of heaven on the earth. Sounds so poetic and beautiful. Well, how many days are heaven upon the earth? That's what goes on forever. So does it mean that your children will live forever? They're going to be on the earth? That can't be. Is it just some poetic sentence? Kimei ha'shamayim al ha'aretz? Weird sentence. I always wondered about that. I've turned to people after davening and I say that and I tell me what that means and people scratch their heads. What does this mean exactly? So here Hirsch says, after a couple of ideas, it may mean that the Jewish people in general, multiple generations, v'neichem doesn't mean the next generation, but it means lots. But he says that's not really good because this is your days and then your children's days. It's not like your days, it's your generation. Your children is the next one generation. So he doesn't like that. Rather, he says, Kimei ha'shamayim al ha'aretz, he says, Shamayim is the central office that guides Aretz. And that's really, we know that heaven guides earth. So similarly, the days of blossoming of your land are really your days. If you live the right way, there's going to be a cosmic, so there's a symbiotic relationship between the heavens and the earth, between your mitzvahs and the bracha that the land is going to have. That's Shemayim al Aretz. That you'll have bracha in the land and it'll be good, just like Shemayim is relevant to the Aretz, so too. He says the hatzlacha in the world depends on your moral behavior. This relationship is given expression throughout the whole parasha, he says. Your relationship to your land is like that of the sky to the earth. If you fulfill God's commandments, you will shower blessing upon your land, and this influence of yours on your land will endure. That's Yirbu Yimeichem. That'll be a lasting one. But it's not talking about length of time. It'll be a bracha that's gezunt. If you do it right, then it'll be just as Shemayim relates to Aretz, you will bring about that bracha onto the land. For long periods, your days will be reflected in the days of your land, just as the days of heaven materialize on the earth. So, something that's a new pshat in the pasuk. That's one thing I wanted to share with you. And lastly, this could really be a whole separate shir, and maybe next week I'll spend 5 more minutes on it. But the mitzvah in Vayomer of tzitzis, so maybe briefly I'll tell you a few very beautiful insights there. So he says, he has a long 12 pages in collected writings, which maybe that's what I'll do, maybe a separate share of the subject of tzitzis. But for tonight, just this. He says that the idea of tzitzis is an extension of your clothing. After the chait of Adam and Chava, so they put on leaves, but Hashem gave them clothing. Clothing is the statement to humans that you have human dignity. For us, he says that, I think it was after the Mekosh Sheitzim, right after one of the Chatoim, Hashem then has the mitzvah tzitzis, and I believe that's the point. Am I right, Moshe? At the end of Parshas Shlach, is that the Mekosh Sheitzim? I didn't have time to look it up.
I believe, yes.
You know, yes. I'm not sure? Yes? Okay, very good. So, in other words, after man fell again and was Mechal Shabbos, so again, a reminder about our human dignity, that he was about to ignore the whole idea of Hashem being the Borei Olam. The tzitzis is a reminder of our dignity. How does it work? Well, we have our beged. Our beged essentially covers most of our body, and it leaves open our faces and our limbs to go about our, those are the parts that are the human activities, the rest we cover. The strings that extend past our clothing, so don't think of them as just a decoration, because they're to be made of the kind of material that typically you would have for clothing. Wool or linen are the typical things that he said, that's the standard in the Torah of what you would have made your clothing out of, either wool or linen. Here you'd have to make your tzitzis out of that material. If it was just a decoration, you wouldn't want to use clothing material, you'd use decoration material, some other stuff. I don't know, plastic or cotton or something. And that's why halacha, it's improper to have your tzitzis be any other color besides the techelus, which we'll talk about, because it would look like a decoration. But the point is, you're supposed to look at these strings and say, well, this isn't a decoration, so what is it? Well, it's a mitzvah, is what it is. And what's this mitzvah supposed to make me think about? What's it attached to? It's attached to my clothing. It's to remind you about the human dignity. When your hearts and your eyes may pull you away from keeping the mitzvahs, this reminds you, no, there's a God in the world, the invisible God that you can't see, and therefore you're going to be lured after your what's on your mind, in front of you, your eyes and your mind. No, there's something that you can't see that's invisible. This will be in front of you to remind you of the mitzvahs. And he says that everyone knows this, famous Rashi's, the word tzitzis, even though there's no yud in the Chumash, but somehow we make believe there is a yud. So tzitzis, the gematria of that is 600, and there's 8 strings and 5 double knots. That equals 613, so that reminds you of 613 mitzvahs. And then the wrappings around, there's a total of 39 wraps within the four sections of the wrapped tzitzis, and that's the gematria of Hashem Echad. So all of this is supposed to remind you of the unity of Hashem, and that there's an invisible God out there, even though you're being lured after what's in front of you. Don't forget the Torah, there's a God. And why blue? There's another classic Hirsch. The word blue, its shorish is the word kala, which means ending, comes to an end. Techeles is where the eye's perception ends. You see as much as you possibly can until the end of all of its limitations, and then you know there's something beyond that. You can't perceive everything, which reminds us that there's something beyond what we see. You're seeing in front of you, and you're being lured after that. This is to remind you of the invisible God beyond what you can perceive. This comes to an end, but there's more past that. That's why Techeles, that's why the Torah calls it Techeles. It's blue, but it's blue not just because the sky is blue. But why is the sky called blue? And why is that color called blue? Because that's the end of where the human perception go. Past that we can't, but we know there's something beyond that. So all of this is a reminder to harness ourselves, to remind ourselves about Hashem.